Hello, 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 boys, girls, ladies, gentlemen, gentle ladies, and so on, and everything in between. Welcome to the Transatlantic Perspective, the podcast that fails to inform you about anything valuable every single week. Neil?
Yes, sir.
Hello, my friend.
Hello.
This is Neil Rasmussen, fun engineer, sound engineer extraordinaire, and I am your co-host with the most, Ivo Ivanov. It's snowing outside, buddy.
Yeah, it's kind of nice. You don't see that too much anymore.
Yeah, I was about to say, it doesn't snow in Kansas anymore. It's very rare, and it's snowing. It's not one of those flaky snows that are going to melt right away. It's really coming down. It kind of is turning into mush and water right now, but the forecast is that it's going to keep snowing, right?
Yeah, I think we're going to get several inches of snow. It's going to cool down tonight.
And freeze.
Yep,
and then all the good stuff.
And then tomorrow, it's going to continue till late morning, and then the winds are going to pick up, and it's going to be like blizzardy because there'll be gusts up to 40 miles per hour.
So miserable week, you're saying?
Yeah.
And you and I will be traveling.
We'll travel on Saturday. Yeah. And there's another storm coming through Thursday into Friday. So we'll see.
So maybe we stay home. Let the ladies go because they're taking the train. They're safe. But we will have to travel after them.
Yeah.
Catch up with them in the beautiful city of St. Louis.
Ivo, you should be like the mayor now.
Why?
You should get the key to the city because you've been there so many times.
I know St. Louis better than I know my hometown of Sofia. I have been in every little pocket, every corner, every small street, every cul-de-sac of this city. It's ridiculous. I've done the Anheuser-Busch Brewery tour.
How many times would you guess, really?
Over 30.
Oh, my.
I know word for word the tour. I know every little part of this enormous brewery.
Could you step in and take over the brewing?
Absolutely. I know the tour word for word. I can go and tell the history, everything, what happened during the Prohibition. I can take you on a tour of the Clydesdale stables, just the packaging factory, everything. The schoolhouse.
Could you make the beer?
You know what? Anyone can make the beer because the brew house and the brewmaster, as you know, we've done this tour together with you, used to be a very involved process that had so many components to it. And you really needed to have craftsmanship. But now you are sitting basically in a control room that resembles a NASA control room, and you're pushing buttons and computers are doing everything. The brew house is still gorgeous the original chandeliers. Yeah. From the chandeliers in the brew house are out of this world. They're really a work of art. And they were purchased by the Bush family, I believe, right after the 1904 World Fair that took place in St. Louis.
Yes, that's right.
He saw him at the exhibit from Belgium, and he said, I'm going to purchase those chandeliers. They're enormous. They're 4 stories tall. So this brew house has basically a giant atrium, and they're hanging from the ceiling, which is a glass ceiling all the way down. And there's something else, just beautiful, beautiful. The Clydesdale stables are also fantastic. And for the listeners who don't know, Anheuser-Busch distributed beer quickly using Clydesdales in the 1930s. Clydesdales are giant 1-ton horses, very muscular, very, very strong draft horses. And they are so indebted to these horses that they keep several of them inside the factory.
Yeah.
Where there's a historic stables with just beautiful, beautiful interior and outside pasture area and walking area for the exercise area for the horses. And that's where they keep them. And after going there over 30 times, this last time, which was just a few weeks back, I ended up encountering the two to Dalmatians, because Dalmatians are also part of the lore of Anheuser-Busch, and the Dalmatians are never at the stables. This is the first time. It's very rare, they told me. And the two Dalmatians were adorable, and they ran right into me, towards me, and let me pet them, and it was wonderful. So great place. Really, the tour is fantastic. Of course, the beer sampling is like nothing else. It's wonderful.
Yeah.
On this last tour, they had a sample beer three times, which was different than in years past.
Yeah.
They changed it all the time a little bit.
Yeah.
So we had...
straight from the vat.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then also at the brew house. And then, of course, afterwards, you have a choice of several different beers, not just Budweiser, because they also manufacture some IPAs and some beers for export for Europe. So there's some more serious beers with high alcohol content. So this time was like a lot of beer, and I was starting to worry because I was the driver. So, you know, I took it easy.
Yeah.
I took it easy. Yeah. So, yeah, St. Louis, a lot to see, a lot of things we should probably discuss in one of our next episodes. But today, my friend, we are going to do an episode that has become a tradition because we started this podcast last year in the beginning of January with a look back at 2022 and the people we have lost in 2022. And so we decided to do one of those every year, and not with sadness, but a look back in celebration of the exceptional lives of some celebrities and famous people that have left a mark and deserve to be mentioned and deserve to be remembered. So this year, 2023, the year that passed, it was not as devastating as 2022 because seemingly everyone died in 2022.
Oh,
it was insane.
Yeah.
It was out of control.
There were so many that there were names popping up that you said, I forgot about that person.
It was unbelievable how many amazing people we've lost. This year is not as bad, mostly because there weren't any celebrities left after 2022. So, you know, the one that immediately comes to mind is Matthew Perry.
Yeah, absolutely.
Good news, it's gonna spread far. There's beauty everywhere, and it starts in your heart. There's beauty everywhere, and it starts in your heart.
Good news of the week.
Now, Matthew Perry, of course, we know him as the lovable, adorable character from the television series Friends.
Yes.
And many other movies, actually. He was participating in many other television series, some full feature movies. He was an accomplished actor.
Yeah.
And beloved. Now, we got to talk about his struggles.
Yeah.
Because he struggled with drug addiction for quite a while and alcohol addiction.
Yeah.
So he was on the mend. He was doing well.
Absolutely.
He was in therapy. He was recovering. Now, what's really shocking about his passing is he died of overdose with ketamine.
Ketamine, yeah, in a hot tub.
Ketamine, yes, is a dissociative drug.
Yeah.
And what some listeners don't know, and especially those in Europe, is that ketamine has become extremely popular therapeutic drug here in the United States.
Yeah.
There are clinics all over the place, ketamine clinics. It has been approved for use by the FDA under controlled environment, of course. Here in Kansas City, we have many ketamine clinics.
Mm-hmm.
Now, ketamine, of course, known street drug, a Special K.
Right.
That's what the street name is, Special K, was a horse tranquilizer for the longest time. And it's a very powerful tranquilizer because it's a dissociative drug. You basically separate yourself from your body when you take this drug. What the medical establishment has discovered that it's a very, very efficient treatment for depression.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a personal story. I have someone close to me that was struggling big time. And one single dose of ketamine, one single injection, cured that person from suicidal tendencies. That's how effective it is, but super, incredibly dangerous.
Yeah.
He was taking it on his own. And obviously, when you're in a hot tub or in a bathtub and you take it, you leave your body.
Yeah.
And you don't even know you're drowning.
No.
Until it's too late, or maybe never,
never awake. Yeah.
So that's how we lost Matthew Perry. So, but we also lost another great actor, Ryan O'Neill.
Yes.
What do you remember him from?
Oh,
Love God. Story.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's the big one, I think, in his life that he probably, that was his peak, I think.
You know. Paper Moon was good.
Oh, Paper Moon was incredible.
Yeah. Now,
and was his daughter in that with him?
Tatum. Yeah.
She was amazing in that too. Yeah. As a little, what, six-year-old, seven-year-old.
Yeah, she was wonderful. Yeah. And he was this stunningly handsome actor in Love Story, of course, and a generation of young women fell in love with him because of that movie. And he remained active in Hollywood and did a lot of other shows, movies. I've seen him in small roles in movies. Kind of maintained his good looks, frankly. He was a good-looking old man. One of those people that just age gracefully.
Kind of like Robert Redford.
Yeah, kind of like him. In his later years, he reminded me of William Shatner a lot. He even looked like him.
Uh-huh.
Like in his older years, he looked like William Shatner. So he, sadly, he battled cancer for quite a while. He had leukemia in 2001, was diagnosed with leukemia, which he was in remission. But then prostate cancer got him in 2012. So it's been a long battle. But, you know, he lived 82 years. He left quite a rich heritage and a lot of great movies and a lot of great memories. Shane McGowan. Now, Shane was a weird character, man. He was the front man of the group Pogues.
Oh, God, yes.
And of course we love Pogues. The Fairy Tale of New York.
Yes.
One of the most beloved. Yeah. You know, last episode we talked about Christmas.
Yeah.
And weird Christmas stuff. And we mentioned so many songs. Christmas staples, and we failed to mention this one, but that one's great. My personal favorite, Dirty Old Town.
Oh, my God, that is such a great drinking song.
Dirty Old Town, Dirty Old Town. And there's a harmonica melody in it that I learned to play. One of my first things that I learned on the harmonica was that, because it's very simple, but I loved that song, and I loved his talent, but my goodness, was he a mess.
Yeah.
This guy... Every Irish stereotype out there.
Yeah.
So much drinking.
Yeah.
So much drinking and smoking and who knows what else, that he was most of the time completely uncontrollable. And he always looked unhealthy since he was 25. His teeth were rotted. You know, he struggled with this. Even though he had all kinds of problems, he was so appreciated by other musicians. Apparently, he had a great personality. He was immensely talented. He was the love of Sinead O'Connor, who also passed away this year. And
this year?
This year. She passed away this year, and she was exactly my age. Remember, she came on the big scene in 1990 with Nothing Compares to You, the great song written by Prince.
Yeah.
And originally performed by Prince, but she made that song world famous and was unstoppable in the early 90s. Everything she did turned to gold. Gosh, she had a weird, amazing voice that would just dance around the octaves and go up, go down, she would hit a note and hold it forever. And it seemed effortless with her. She was different. Do you remember SNL?
I think so.
The SNL episode?
Yeah, where she performed, and at the end of it, she tour picture of the Pope in half.
Yes.
That, I mean, that is such a minor thing nowadays, especially. But back then, oh, that she got blackballed for doing that.
Yes, yes, absolutely. It was a big scandal.
Yeah.
She was criticized. Her records were being, burned.
Yeah.
There's a lot of Catholics in this country, and the Pope is infallible. And, you know, that was a big controversy, but she was also a very tortured individual.
Yeah.
You know, I remember her album, The Lion and the Cobra, which was one of my favorite albums of the early 90s. And not just Nothing Compares to You, other songs I liked more, especially from that album, The Lion and the Cobra. There were so many good songs. And then there's one that I really, really love, and it's a cover, and it's called A Drink Before the War.
Oh, I don't know that one.
Oh, it is just freaking spectacular. And her voice is just out of this world, out of this world. She had a very tough childhood, and she suffered abuse from her own mother. And she wrote a song that I encourage you to find on the internet, on YouTube, and watch it from beginning to end. It's a stunning song, and it's about her struggling to get over the trauma that was inflicted on her by her own mother. I don't know what the cause of death is, but I know that she suffered with mental illness, with all kinds of problems and serious clinical depression. So sad ending to Sinead O'Connor's
amazing
life.
Yeah.
You know, Tina Turner passed away this year. A lot of famous singers, like iconic singers, we lost.
Yeah.
Tina Turner was, of course, for us, always one of our favorites. That voice and that showmanship.
Yeah.
My goodness, she's one of these people, Neil, that are just born for the stage.
Absolutely. Yeah.
She had to be on stage.
Unbelievable. And to rise up from her marriage to Ike, who totally tried to control and beat her down. And she just rose above it, did not let it hold her back, and just took off and shined.
Yeah, she was married to him for quite a while, I believe 14 or 16 years. And they were a duo.
Yeah.
They performed together. And they started in St. Louis. Did you know that?
No, I didn't.
All right. Then she moved when she was 16 to St. Louis. That's where they met. That's where they teamed up. And they started in St. Louis.
Wow.
So that's how they became famous. First in St. Louis and afterwards all over the world. But so many great songs. And, oh gosh, do you remember Private Dancer?
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Oh, my God. I'm a private dancer. A dancer for money.
I'll do what you want me to do.
What a voice.
Yeah, she was
what
amazing.
What a voice. The other huge 80s, What's Love Got to Do With It?
Yeah.
Secondhand Emotion.
Oh, my gosh. That's amazing.
Great lyrics and a great song.
Yeah.
And it kind of, you listen to the song, the way she performed it, you can't help it but think that it's about her life.
Yeah.
You know, when she divorced Ike, you know what she did? She did not want any ownership of the music they had done together. She gave him everything.
Just to get away from him.
To get away from him. Do you know what she kept only?
Uh-uh.
Her name, Tina Turner. It wasn't her real name. I think her real name was like Anna May or something. You listeners check it. I'm not going to check that, but she was forever Tina Turner for her fans, and she loved her stage name. And she said, you know what? You take everything. Just give me my name, because he came up with it, or they together came up with it, but he gave her the ownership of the name. And then she made all the money in the world on her own. Said, see, I can do it on my own.
Yeah.
Then she moved to Switzerland and lived her later life in Switzerland in a beautiful house, but she suffered with a lot of illnesses, And sadly, she lost her children early. Her two boys died, and she's now survived only by her two adopted boys. Oh. So that's kind of sad.
That is very sad.
Sir Bobby Charlton, I believe we lost greatest soccer players of all time, or footballers, as we call them in Europe. And he was 86, and he was the heart and soul of the one and only championship won by England in the World Cup in 1966. This man was, I believe, he was bald at the age of 15. I don't know. He was always bald.
Yeah.
And that didn't matter. He looked always like on the pitch. He was always in his prime, 25. Yeah. And his IQ was off the charts. He just commandeered the football team like nobody else, and was knighted later in life, of course, and was the captain of the team.
What team was that?
He played for Manchester United, and he played for the English national team, of course. So Suzanne Summers.
Suzanne Summers.
Well, do you remember her most?
Oh, of course, Three's Company.
Three's Company.
I mean, that was to me. I was pretty young, and I grew up in a Catholic household, and they were pretty repressed. And so some of the innuendos, and my dad always referred to it as jiggle television. Uh-huh. I think she didn't wear a bra a lot in the show. And so as a youngster.
I feel like this started with Who Dreams of Jeannie?
Oh, I Dream of Jeannie.
I Dream of Jeannie.
Yes.
I think that's Barbara where it started. Eden. Yes.
Yeah, totally. And then it was continued with
and Bewitched.
Farrah Fawcett.
Yeah.
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 As well. Mm.
I remember Suzanne Summers
mostly
with her exercise career. The Thighmaster.
The Thighmaster.
Because I came to the States late in 1990.
Yeah.
And Three's Company was not that big of a show anymore.
Was it even around anymore?
Yeah, it wasn't around.
Yeah.
But she was ubiquitous on television with that darn Thighmaster. And she looked spectacular.
Yeah.
And no matter what, you couldn't tell what age she was.
No.
She was always in incredible shape. And people were buying those things like crazy. I mean, she's made much, much more money with that and her exercise tapes than with her television career. So she was, I believe she was 86 when we lost her.
So she died of cancer, breast cancer.
Yes. Yeah. She struggled with cancer for quite a while.
She beat it and they came back again a couple times. Yeah.
Darn cancer, man. Yeah. It's taken so many of the people that we love and our relatives and friends. And just, we got to do something about it. Burt Young. Does that name say anything?
Burt Young? No.
Burt Young. All right. Because he's just a character actor, but we will always, always remember his face and his voice as Paulie. In the Rocky movies.
His
little friend that was wearing the bucket hat.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it was Sylvester Stallone's best friend, Paulie.
Uh-huh.
A lovable, lovable character. And we lost him. You know, what surprised me was he was only 83. I thought he would be in his 90s. But he's one of these people that he kind of always looked 50.
Yeah.
Even back then, you know. We lost Jimmy Buffett.
Yes.
Last year.
Yeah.
Margaritaville.
Yeah, wasted away in Margaritaville.
Yes. Jimmy Buffett was more of a business figure than a musician. He had created... Did you know that he was a billionaire?
No.
Because of his business empire. Yeah. He created an entire business empire, including bars, like chains of bars, Margaritaville franchises... kind of, he used that island culture and his style of music to build all kinds of lines of products. It was much bigger moneymaker for him than the actual songs. His catalog was not as profitable as his business empire.
Wow.
It was pretty, pretty big. Henry Kissinger passed away, which was a shock to me because I thought he was long dead. He was... aged 100.
Oh, my gosh.
He was aged 100.
He looked old when he was in the
White House.
White House.
Yeah. Secretary of State, and very, very controversial. He was the national security advisor for Nixon and later for Gerald Ford. And, you know, he died like at the end of the year. He was 100, that guy. We lost Rosalind Carter this
she
year.
She was 99.
She was 19. No, she was not 99. Jimmy Carter is currently 99.
That's right.
He turned 99 on October 1st. But she was a few years younger than him. She was probably 96. But what a great human being she was, and what an incredible benefit to society she is in her work.
Yeah,
you know, she was such an unconventional first lady because she was so active, just like Jimmy Carter, after they left the White House. And they've built so many homes for the needy and for the poor, for Habitat for Humanity, and has done so much to eradicate illnesses in Africa, epidemics, the guinea worm epidemic. I mean, she's done so much for the world and just tirelessly working until the very end. And, you know, I was thinking Jimmy Carter is 99. This year he's supposed to turn 100 on October 1st. I doubt he's going to make it because
Is he in the hospital?
In the hospice. Yeah. He's been in a hospice since last February.
Yeah.
So almost 1 year he's been in a hospice. And he's kind of cognizant of his surroundings still, kind of. He actually made it to the funeral ceremony. And but here's the thing. I feel like they've been together for almost their entire life.
Yeah.
I mean, we are talking 75 years together. And when two people are so intertwined, they, even their heartbeats, their pulse is synchronized.
Yeah.
And most of the time when you see one of these people go, the other one follows shortly.
Soon after.
There's an entire syndrome, the Takotsubo syndrome, that or a broken heart syndrome that we can talk about some other time. But
Oftentimes a couple will be in the hospital at the same time holding hands, and one will pass and the other will pass soon thereafter.
Yeah. Gina Lollobrigida died. I don't know if you know her.
Oh, yeah. She was like a bombshell.
She was this curvaceous, incredibly sexy bombshell. She was regarded as the most beautiful woman in the world for a while. An Italian actress, just stunning, stunningly beautiful. And speaking of stunningly beautiful actresses, we lost Raquel Welch passed away.
Yeah.
How would you remember her? Kind of the same way.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh.
10,000 years BC.
Yes, that one was the first one. And
now she was barely dressed.
That was an amazing movie for me as a teenager. Yeah. And having a poster of her on the wall, you know, that was something that my parents reluctantly let me have on my wall at home.
Yeah. You and the Shawshank Redemption, Tim Robbins in Shawshank Redemption.
Yes.
Yeah, you were probably at night secretly sneaking out of the house through a hole behind that poster, weren't you?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Mohamed Al-Fayed, who was the owner of Harrods and the soccer team Fulham FC, died. I thought he was dead long ago, but he was, of course, his life was closely related Princess Di.
Princess Di, yeah.
And his son Dodi died alongside her in that 1997 car crash. But he was 94.
Wow.
He was 94. You know, speaking of children of famous people who passed away, Lisa Marie Presley died.
Yes.
She was younger than me.
Yeah, really?
Yeah, she's a couple years younger than me.
What did she die of?
Cardiac arrest. And, you know, when I heard it, it was sudden. It was boom. And her heart was gone. It exploded. And I couldn't help it but think of her father. And that could be genetic. You know, of course, he had all kinds of substance abuse. But maybe she was predisposed to heart disease because it came out of nowhere, a coronary that just took her out in a second, in a split second. Her mom, Priscilla, still alive. And I was thinking, did she inherit a gene from her dad? I don't know. It's all speculation. But she was very beautiful.
Married briefly to
Michael Jackson. Yeah, that was a weird, bizarre celebrity marriage. And we know that Michael Jackson was obsessed with Elvis.
Yeah.
She looks a little bit like him. She looks a lot like him.
Yeah.
And that was a strange marriage. But we lost Lisa Marie Presley, sadly. She, I believe, has 3 daughters, if I'm not mistaken. But yeah, we lost her. Priscilla still alive. There is a movie called Priscilla right now, and I believe Sofia Coppola is involved in it. She directed it, and it's kind of controversial because apparently Priscilla is not very happy. Priscilla Presley is not very happy with the way she's been portrayed.
Yeah.
So I haven't watched it yet. It's on my list. We spoke recently around Halloween about the greatest horror movies of all times. And we talked about this one amazing director whom we lost this year, and it's William Friedkin. Yes.
I didn't know he died.
I know, man. I know. It's like you look at the year past and you're, oh my gosh, really? It just went unnoticed, but William Friedkin, The Exorcist.
Oh, my, so many good movies.
The French Connection.
French Connection was one of
those. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
To Live and Die in L.A. was a great movie. August 7th, he passed away at the age of 87. I'm noticing, you know, we lost some people relatively young, but I noticed that big-time celebrities are living longer.
They are, yeah.
I mean, 80s and 90s, and it's a wonderful thing. You know, he was 87, and a lot of these people didn't necessarily live the super clean life. It's good to see that a lot of celebrities are living longer. Speaking of people that left us young, Angus Cloud, which you probably don't know who he is, but I am, because I'm trying to stay kind of in touch with the youth culture, I watch the shows that are very popular with the current young generation. And I want to know also what my players are talking about.
Right.
I coach soccer in high school, teenagers, and they start talking about the show. And I'm like, oh, I don't know what to say. In the bus, they're talking, they're asking me questions. I'm like, I have no idea. So I try to watch those. So I got involved with HBO's Euphoria. And this is a scandalous, scandalous show. The characters are in high school, but it's littered with drugs, pornography, explicit, you know, nudity, and it's out of control. But then I have to remind myself, well, this is what today's generation is. They were exposed to all this stuff through the internet. Like we were not like this. But to them, this is not a big deal. This explicit stuff, to them, the full frontal nudity and all that stuff on Euphoria that frankly shocked me the first couple episodes I watched, to them that's normal because they have at their fingertips all this stuff and they don't care.
Yeah.
It doesn't faze them at all. They don't even notice it. But Euphoria is actually an incredibly well-produced show with fantastic character development, incredible production value, and outstanding acting performances. Outstanding. Zendaya is in it. You know, there's some great acting.
And so Angus,
Angus Cloud was the main man. He played Fez. He was basically the main character, and he was only 25. Only 25. And he was the most appreciated character by everyone on the show. I think that he was the main character. There's really isn't supposed to be a main character. It's an ensemble cast. But I feel like everything kind of gravitated around him and he was magnetic. His like presence in every frame was demanding your attention. So it was a good show. I don't know if it will come back. It seems like the production is forever devastated by the loss of this young man.
Oh.
Don't know the reason.
It was drugs. It's multiple
probably,
drugs, it said.
Probably.
Yeah, I just looked him up real quick.
Probably.
Yeah.
That would be my guess. Drug use is prominent on the show as well. And I hope he wasn't influenced in any way by osmosis from the show. into his real life. But my goodness, what a loss. And for the acting establishment, because he was just starting at this age of 25, I could see him in many, many big roles in the on the big screen. And sadly, this will never happen. Dude, we lost Pee Wee Herman.
I know, Paul Rubens.
Paul Rubens died. That's the laugh. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah,
Pee Wee's Big Adventure.
I can't believe he was 70 years old.
I know. Because of the way he was, you felt that he was always this forever 25 or 30, whatever the age of that character is.
Yeah.
And with the pants that are way too short for, you know, and the bicycle and the goofy
hair.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He passed on July 30th, age 70.
Musician, a big one, David Crosby.
Crosby, Stills, Nash. Yeah.
He really defined that time period. I mean, that band and him alone. I mean, it's amazing singer songwriter. I think he was a founding member of the Byrds.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. How old was he?
70.
Oh, what?
No. I'm blanking. I'm going back to Pee Wee Herman.
Must be 80.
Oh, yeah. He's got to be 84, 85.
Yeah.
81.
81. So, yeah. And of course, those guys being the stars that they were at the time, they've done a lot of stuff.
They didn't
drink mineral water.
But you know, the ganja they did back then was nothing like it is now. But they did other kinds of drugs too.
Tony Bennett passed away. Because so many freaking legends of that age. You know, we lost Tony Bennett. I remember when he passed in July, one of his relatives said, you know, he had Alzheimer's, but just the other day before he passed, he was on his piano playing and singing song after song after song.
You know that
music stays with you.
And so I've seen many videos of somebody who's just not engaged or babbling nonsense. And then they put on a headset of music from their time period and they snap right into reality and sing. And they sing the songs just perfectly.
Yeah.
And then you take the music away and people kind of
snap
retreat
back to reality.
Yeah.
No, it's interesting. It seems like there's a special faculty in our brain that's deep, deep, deep somewhere there in the cortex, and it's the last thing to go, if it ever goes. It's like we lose our past one memory at a time, but it seems like the music stays with us.
Yeah. You know, my mom had dementia, and as she was in hospice care and I was by her bedside as she was passing, I knew all the songs, but I'm not very good with lyrics from her time period. So I would bring it up on my phone, the musical instrument of whatever song it was, and I'd sing that to her in her ear. And in though she was no longer really engaged, she would smile every time she heard me singing, and I did that for hours.
I've heard a lot of stories like this at memory care facilities where people who otherwise have stopped communicating with the outside world and are basically locked in would suddenly respond to music in the most unexpected ways and would start singing along, remembering the lyrics, the melody.
Yeah.
It would bring their mind back and their voice back, and they would be happy.
Yeah, not to make light of any of this, but so when I get dementia and I'm in the home, I'm going to start singing, "Can't You Think I'm Six?" or what's another?
Amish Paradise. Been spending most of our lives living in an Amish Paradise. By the way, Coolio passed away in 2022. But Tony Bennett, I Left My Heart in San Francisco.
Oh, it's a wonderful one.
Rags to Riches because of you.
Yeah.
He sang his last song before he passed was Because of You.
Really?
It was the night before he passed away.
Who'd he sing it to?
To himself. Oh. He was at his grand piano at home. I think his daughter shared this and was just happy and smiling and singing Because of You. Mm-hmm. One of his big hits. He had 20 Grammy Awards. Jane Birkin passed away as well. I don't know Jane. So she was an actress and a singer, and she sang, she's known for one song, Je t'aime mon éplou. Je t'aime mon éplou.
Yeah, I,
you know that one,
I could
right?
sing it. I know what it sounds like. Yeah.
Silvio Berlusconi passed away. You might not know him, but he was one of the most controversial figures in Europe. He was a larger-than-life politician and a businessman, prime minister of Italy, and he was a mafioso. That's the only way I can put it. He was a complete mafioso. He owned football teams. He was involved with the mafia. There were prostitute scandals. There were all kinds of, there was always a scandal following him, no matter what. And he didn't care about any of it. He was above the law. He was kind of a predecessor of all these strong men that are popping up now everywhere, all over Europe, United States, South America, everywhere. So Silvio Berlusconi passed away, and he was a big, big, big character in Italian political scene. One of my favorite actors of all time.
Oh, I know where you're going.
No, you probably don't. Treat Williams. I love Treat Williams. Yeah. I've always had, because the first time I saw the movie Hair, the Miłosz Forman movie Hair, I was blown away.
Yeah.
And he was George Berger.
Yeah, it's amazing.
He was the main character.
Yes.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
I love that character. And I tried to emulate him, which was stupid, you know, but I saw the movie in the 70s. We still had the Iron Curtain, and I don't know how the movie made it. I know why, because it was an anti-Vietnam War movie, and the communist government probably felt like, okay, so this movie is criticizing the Western society and the U.S. in this war, so we're going to play it. But really what happened was people got enamored with the hippie movement because of that movie. And the free-spirited characters.
Oh, so great.
The music was incredible. Yeah. And Treat Williams as George Berger was just freaking incredible.
Yeah.
Loved him in every scene of that movie. I watched this movie maybe 50 times. I knew every song word for word. And the last scene, Manchester, England. And when he's climbing up the stomach of the military airplane.
Yes.
And then in the most beautiful way, script-wise, you find out that he's gone, that he had died in the war. When they sing at his grave, they continue the song at his grave, his friends.
Yeah.
And the Let the Sunshine In.
What a great.
It makes me cry every time.
Yeah.
To this day, freaking, I can't hold my tears back, because I was in love with that character and with that movie. And it tells you how good of a filmmaker Miłosz Forman is, how good the script was and how good the movie was and how good his acting job was of George Berger. Now, sadly, he died. Why? He was 71. But he was as free-spirited as ever, and he was riding his Harley Davidson, and an SUV cut right in front of him. He was driving straight, SUV cut in front of him, and he crashed, and we lost him because of a motorcycle crash. But how interesting, 71 on a
motorcycle,
on a Harley Davidson,
still
living
spirit,
the life.
Yeah. Still a free spirit.
Yeah. Good man, good actor, loved him, always appreciated him. Jerry Springer died.
Yes.
This last year.
Yeah.
What a character.
Oh my gosh. He was like on TV for 20 years straight.
Yeah. He was ubiquitous on daytime TV, and he became synonymous with daytime TV. In the early 90s, when Jerry Springer show started,
it
just exploded. And he was the first one that I believe put white trash on the main stage.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
On America's main stage, and realized that it's a money-making machine, that these characters are fantastic for business. And, you know, it was cynical. It was horrible.
It was a train wreck.
Watch, it was a train wreck, and we were rubbernecking. People were rubbernecking,
absolutely,
watching this train wreck and kind of laughing at these poor people. A lot of it, gosh, I was hoping. I remember watching a few episodes, and I was hoping it's staged. I was hoping that these people's lives are not that wrecked and not that sad, but my goodness.
It was real.
It was absolutely.
Real.
And he was a perfect host for this show because he had an uncanny ability to relate to people and communicate with them.
Yeah.
As a host, as a politician, because he was also a mayor of Cincinnati.
Yes.
And beloved mayor at that. You know, he was good at everything. Even just from what I've heard, talking to people on the street, he would instantly strike a conversation. And he was very, very good at communicating. He was Bill Clinton-esque at communicating with the common man. And, you know, the chant, Jerry, Jerry, Jerry.
In the midst of chaos, he could still keep it going.
Though
he did start to have these guards. Security guards who had to jump in to keep people from fist fighting.
Yeah.
One time, the
bold guy, remember the bold bodyguard?
Yes.
And he was so, people loved him. Something about him.
He had the Klan on once. And I remember there was a huge fight.
That was,
it got way out of control.
Yeah. I think Geraldo Rivera had the Nazis. Remember?
Yes.
He had Nazis
Am I confusing?
He might be confusing.
I think you're right. Yeah. It was Geraldo.
But Jerry Springer was kind of a visionary in that regard, that he realized how much money, and there's been so many shows that have capitalized on the poor white trash.
Yeah.
Trailer trash people.
Oh, it's so.
In Europe, people don't know, but we have this entire subculture here that is of people that live kind of under the surface and live a very specific lifestyle that's, I can't call it specifically uniquely American, because there's some other people like this all over the world, but man, that is a thick layer, a social layer. And a lot of these people are proud of the way they look at life.
Yeah.
And, you know, the Honey Boo Boo thing, remember that?
Oh, Lord have mercy. That was just horrific.
The Duck Dynasty, that was very staged, I feel.
Duck Dynasty, yeah.
I think they were smarter than they
were
portrayed themselves.
Oh, they were. They grew those beards out for that show.
Yeah. But he was the one that exploited that culture and created a fringe economy, you know, based on that culture. And so, you know, his catchphrase was take care of yourself and each other, which is ridiculous.
You know, when he would goad people on and bring them on the show, and then they would do a paternity test. And so they'd bring the boyfriend and the husband on the show, and both of them were claiming it was their baby. And of course, they're going to start fighting when they find out who.
Remember, he spawned other shows like Maury Povich, where he would just prove paternity tests.
Yeah, absolutely.
That you are the father, or you are mother.
That was the whole show.
I can't believe it, but I mean, we talked about Tony Bennett and Jimmy Buffett and Crosby and Sinead O'Connor. Harry Belafonte also died this last year.
No.
Seriously, man.
Was it early in the year?
No, well, kind of, end of April, he passed away. He was 96 though. He was 96 and it was, congestive heart failure, but he also had quite a life and he was a social and civil rights activist. He was a fantastic stage actor, theatrical actor, movie actor. He was the king of Calypso. You know, his voice.
What a handsome man, too.
Handsome. Yeah. I was in love with his daughter, Shari Belafonte.
Yes.
Oh, my God. She was so beautiful.
Yeah.
I don't even know if she's still alive. Dude, Bob Barker died, which
That's what
he
I was
must have
bring
been
up
300
next.
Years old.
And he worked like so late into his life. I think he was still doing this 2 years ago.
Again, our European listeners have no idea of what the F are we talking about.
No, they've got to know.
No,
the Price is Right.
There is no Price is Right in Europe, man. That's such an American show.
It totally is.
So can you explain
guessing the price?
Can you explain the show to our European listeners?
Yeah. So the Price is Right. You have an audience full of people, and then they call people down from the audience randomly, and then they have a lineup of five people, and those five people have to look on stage and guess the closest price to, say, a motorcycle. Who's ever closest comes up, and they have the chance to win more prizes by guessing the price of baked beans, Palmolive dishwashing soap. But basically, it's just people trying to guess the price of the commodities in the United States. And at the very end, they get a chance to win a brand new car or a trip to Europe or again, it's just head to head people trying to figure out closer prices to these things than the other.
It's such an American, consumerist.
It reeks of it.
Concept.
Yeah.
So I don't think in Europe this show would be popular with people trying to guess the price of a product. If you go over, you lose. And it's just such a ridiculous concept. But my goodness, was that popular here.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's just obsessively housewives were watching every episode.
Everyone.
And there were people that knew the price of every product, they would watch the show and memorize price. It was just insanity. So Bob Barker passed away. I think he was close to 100. Burt Bacharach died.
Yes.
You know, legendary composer. Walk On By.
Raindrops Keep Falling
that's
on
my
favorite.
Head. Raindrops Keep Falling on My Hand.
And Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid.
It was written specifically for the movie. Yeah, it was specifically written for the movie.
I thought they just picked it up.
I believe it won the Academy Award because it wasn't a song that was written for anything else, just for the movie.
Oh, that was a fantastic scene.
Unbelievable. Just a great, great composer. Paco Rabanne, I don't know if you know him, but in Europe he's extremely popular, and he's a Spanish fashion designer, Paco Rabanne.
I thought there's a Paco Rabanne cologne, right?
Yeah, there's all kinds of Paco Rabanne. Everything Paco Rabanne. He was 88. Now, this was just such a tragedy, but Julian Sands, we lost Julian Sands, a fantastic British actor who had moved to the United States to Hollywood. He went on a hike in the California mountains and never returned. He was lost in a snowstorm. And Neil, it was like something like 6 or 7 month surge before they recovered his remains. They found his remains. Don't mess with Mother Nature.
No.
Don't go unprepared.
Yeah.
Don't go anywhere unprepared. You think you're in California and you're safe? No. Wilderness. People understand the wilderness is unforgiving and it is so vast. In America, there's so many wild, vast places. I just flew back from California and I was flying over the Sierra Nevadas. I was flying over Northern California, the high desert in Utah and Nevada. My goodness, guys, endless ocean of land without human being in it. No homes, no infrastructure, just raw wilderness that is chaos. And it's concerned only with chaos. And, you know, you have no control over it. So he didn't leave itinerary. He didn't prepare for this trip. And we lost this wonderful actor. You probably remember him as the main character in Warlock, which was a really good horror series, The Warlock.
Yeah.
And Arachnophobia.
Oh, okay. Oh, I remember that.
Gosh.
Yeah.
That was good. He was in a room with a view. He was in Leaving Las Vegas. He was a serious Shakespearean actor. So, yeah, that's just a big, big loss. I wanted to tell you about someone we lost that you don't know anything about. And it's one of my heroes from childhood. His name was Atanas Golomeev. And he was, the godfather of Bulgarian basketball. Like, he was a massive, massive basketball star. And he was an anomaly because Atanas, and I knew him, I have a few personal stories with him, and he was the most wonderful human being. But he, at the time where the Iron Curtain was impenetrable, he came to Canada and played at McGill University because his father was a diplomat. He was in the diplomatic mission of Bulgaria.
Yeah.
And he went to McGill University for 1 year, just 1 year. And he shattered every imaginable record. And some of those records will never be beaten in the Canadian collegiate
league. Really?
He scored 37.5 points a game. In one game, he scored 57 points.
Oh, my God.
He averaged 37.5 points a game. He was so dominant, so good, that the NBA was interested in him, the New York Knicks. Can you imagine at the time, in the late 60s, there was no foreign players in the NBA. There was no foreign players
right
playing basketball. It was unheard of.
Yeah.
And they wanted him. A guy from freaking communist country from Eastern Europe. And if the situation politically was different, he would have played in the NBA. He was that good, that dominant. He was unstoppable. He was a tall guy. He played a five.
Why didn't he come and play?
Well, the communist government would not allow it.
Oh.
Never. That was unthinkable. I mean, this was in the very midst of the Cold War. It was, there was no way. He was in the epicenter of the Cold War. And he regretted it. I talked to a friend of mine just the other day who's a great basketball player as well, Bulgarian basketball player. And he was recalling how he had a conversation with Atanas. And he told him, man, I regret not being able to play in the NBA. I could have been the first and I could have done a lot of things. And he was one of those guys that were precursors of the modern player because he was very tall. He was, I want to say 6'9", but he played facing the basket. At that time, people this size, players this size were centers. They were prototypical fives,
right,
playing with their back to the basket. But he would face the basket and shoot from the perimeter. He would do everything. He was a center forward and a kind of a modern type player and just a great all-around guy, you know, just a great, great, great character. You know, Jeff Beck, we lost Jeff Beck and... You know, I feel like we might have mentioned his passing last year because he died in the very beginning of the year. He died on January 11th, and I think our show was like towards the end of January where we actually talked about Jeff Beck a little bit. But he's a guy that influenced an entire generation of guitar players, and he created styles and stylings that are being replicated to this day by guitar players. A lot of them frustrated guitar players because a lot of his stuff is impossible to replicate. So I'll never forget the first time I saw him. Actually, it was in the movie Blow Up. It was a Michelangelo Antonioni movie, a legendary movie that won the Cannes Film Festival. But in that movie, there was a scene where the main character wandered into a concert. And the concert was of the Yardbirds.
Yeah,
Jimmy Page and Jeff Beck were on stage playing a song, and the main character looked at them, and everyone was mesmerized by the music. Everybody was frozen and watching the stage. And at some point, the amplifier, Jeff Beck's amplifier, started skipping, and his monitor wasn't working. He started hitting the amplifier with his guitar. He got mad. He was doing a solo and he was not performing well, and he started smashing the amplifier with his guitar to a point where his guitar broke. And he took the guitar and tossed it into the crowd. And suddenly the crowd went wild. Everybody started fighting over that guitar. They wanted to keep it as a memorabilia. And it was a pandemonium. The main character punched a few people, pushed a few people, kicked a few people, and managed to grab the guitar and ran out of the music hall
yeah.
with a giant crowd following him. And he ran and ran left, right, small alleyways, small, you know, streets. And he finally lost everybody that was chasing him. And then he threw guitar on the street, And then he left. And then some other guy walked by, looked at the guitar, picked it up, looked at it and tossed it back onto the street. It was a great scene.
That's
it was
awesome.
A very clever scene. Yeah.
I think I've not seen this one because that movie was 1966. Was there another one? Americanized version that came out?
No, that's the legendary movie. There's a blow-up action movie that came up like in the 90s or 2000s that was not that great. Do you have anyone that you want to mention?
Oh, no, I think you've mentioned...
I know.
Oh, no, what? The actor from Parasite.
His name was Lee Sung-kyun.
Yeah.
He was only 48. But that movie was a very, very clever commentary on the condition of our society.
Yeah.
And the growing chasm between the rich and the rest. I don't say poor because really the chasm is between the rich and the middle class at this point. So that polarization was brilliantly, brilliantly reflected in that movie. And he was outstanding in it. Gaston Glock died as well.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Of course, Gaston Glock created the Glock gun.
Yeah.
Now, he was not into gun manufacturing or weapon manufacturing. He created the Glock in his 50s. He was in his 50s. That was his first gun.
What?
I think it was Glock 17. It was his first time. He was in his 50s. He was, you know what he was doing? Handheld drills before that. He was a craftsman. And he was doing completely different things. But he was manufacturing stuff using polymers. And he's like, why don't I make a gun using polymers instead of steel, a polymer frame, and make it a light gun. And he created it in the 80s, and it instantly became the preferred weapon for the United States law enforcement because of his lightweight. And he had some innovations. It was very simple, just like the Kalashnikov. It was a very, very, very simple weapon. And that was a good thing because, again, it didn't jam. It was easy to assemble parts. Spare parts were very easy to replace. They were interchangeable. And it didn't have a safety.
Yeah.
It had three safeties. But they were automatically disengaged when you pull the trigger strong with force. And then they would engage again when you...
Stop holding the trigger.
Stop holding the trigger. Let go of the trigger and they engage. But it was really a safety. It was no manual safety on it.
That's weird.
So, yeah. And, you know, it became incredibly popular. Maybe one of the most popular guns in history of mankind. And it's all over the United States, not just with law enforcement, but the criminal enterprise as well. And, of course, it's sold everywhere here because gun ownership is legal in the United States. I went to a gun show as a kind of a social experiment recently. You know, those gun shows where guns are sold a little with less regulation,
like
big convention center. I went to Topeka to one of these gun shows, and there were Glocks everywhere. They were selling them like bread. And
there's no background check at a convention. If it's one person selling to another person.
Yeah, or if it's cash. It's also very, very little regulation.
Yeah.
You can just, if you go with cash, you know, things are getting shady. And yeah, people were buying, selling. It was crazy, but Glocks were super popular. So he created a polymer-framed gun, and then he also created a process for the steel parts of the gun, and it's proprietary process called tenifer. And tenifer is interesting because it hardens the steel in a unique way using nitrates. And it's proprietary. I can't explain it. It's chemical. It's too complex. And listeners, I'm going to lose the listeners even if I try to explain it. But it is kind of revolutionary. And those parts that are steel are extremely strong.
Yeah.
They don't freaking break. And so the Glock, Gaston Glock, died. Now, somebody's got to do a movie, because I believe in 2019, he found out that his partner is embezzling money from him, his business partner.
Gaston
okay. Glock. Got to tell you this. Glock was a billionaire. Unlike Kalashnikov, who lived in a freaking communist country and couldn't capitalize on his invention, he was a billionaire, lived like a recluse in a castle, basically. But he was a recluse. He valued his privacy, and he was valued at billions of dollars. Now, he found out his business partner was stealing money from him. His business partner was accused and felt the heat, hired a French mercenary to kill Gaston Glock with a rubber mallet.
What?
Yes. So this mercenary, who is a professional soldier, like probably from the French Legion, I mean, you know, these guys are monsters.
Right.
Attacks him with a rubber mallet. Gaston, at his age, I mind you, he's in his 80s, punches him so hard, fights back and starts punching him, and punches him so hard that the guy collapsed on top of him. And those two guys are in jail, both the mercenary and the guy, his business partner. Wild story. Hey, listeners, occasionally you learn shit here on this podcast. So here you have it, Gaston Glock. Dude, I think we can go on and on and on, but I think it is about time we wrap things up with our good news of the day.
Good news, it's gonna spread far. There's beauty everywhere, and it starts in your heart. There's beauty everywhere, and it starts in your heart.
Good
news of the week. The good news, Neil, today is very simple.
Yes.
Somebody has beaten Tetris.
I heard that.
How about, did you even think that there was a kill screen on Tetris?
No.
I had no freaking idea anyone can beat Tetris. I didn't think there was a pathway within the computer program, within the programming, to beat Tetris.
Yeah. I don't think they planned it that way.
No.
It got to a point where it stopped.
The program couldn't keep up.
Yeah, with the speed.
Yeah, with the speed. So for the longest time, I know that level 29 was the barrier. Because at level 29, if you get to the level 29, the blocks start coming down so fast that the game doesn't respond to the movement of your fingers.
Right.
You can't move the blocks left or right. You know, they just fall with such speed that you can't use the controller to move them. So for the longest time, it was considered that level 29 is the end of the game. You can't beat the game. You can't beat it.
Yeah.
And so a few years back, I remember some interesting development. Somebody, I forgot who it was, I don't think it was an American kid, discovered a new technique in which you hold the controller with your right hand and move the buttons with one hand, and with the other hand, you kind of tickle the controller underneath the controller, rolling your fingers under the controller. Have you seen this?
I've never seen that.
So if you watch now Tetris World Championships and competitions, all the players do that.
Huh.
With left hand, they control, non-dominant hand, they tickle the controller underneath. They somehow move circuits underneath. They know how. And with the other, they're able to move the cursor real fast.
That's crazy.
And so somebody discovered this and got to level 30. Other techniques were implemented as well, like the colors of the blocks change each level. Remember that?
Yes. Oh, yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And they're all bright colors. They're well thought of. But then, you know, they they start changing the colors with the speed as well. They get jumbled. So people started also adjusting their eyes to the colors and slowly moving up. Level 35, level 40, level 50, level 60, Neil, 70, 80, 90.
What?
Yes. And they got into the hundreds.
It's not progressively faster, though.
It is.
God.
It is progressively fast. And it's almost impossible, you know, to operate. So this little kid, man, 13 years old, he looks younger. He looks like he's 10. And his name is Willis Gibson. Willis is from Oklahoma. He's like a neighbor here. And he was at a tournament in Kansas City where he won the championship in Kansas City. And his name became kind of famous, and not his real name because he's known as Blue Scuddy, Blue Scuddy or something.
Yeah.
And so this guy kept pushing the envelope up 138, 140 level. And eventually he got to level 157. So the other day he recorded himself because he felt like he's coming close to crashing the game, which is known as the kill screen.
Right.
Right. He's like, I'll crash the game, you know, and I win. I beat the game. And he was getting closer and closer. And I watched the video. Guys, I recommend you watch this. Watch it because it's heart pounding. It gets closer and closer. At some point, he made a mistake and the block started piling up. And he's like, oh no, I lost it. But he managed to wiggle out of it. A little bit of luck, I think, was involved. You got to watch the video.
Okay.
You see the video, the screen that he's playing, and you also see his face, his reactions, and what he's doing. And it's freaking tantalizing.
Yeah.
So he played for 38 minutes straight. 38 minutes. Gets to 157, level 157, and the blocks are like whizzing down.
Oh, jeez.
So fast, he doesn't have time to think. It's almost like supernatural stuff.
Yeah.
His mind is ahead of the game. It's freaking incredible. And he said at the 38 minute, oh no, I missed it when he made that mistake. And then finally the game froze and crashed and it was the kill screen. And his reaction, he was so emotional. He cried and he's like, oh my God, I'm going to pass out. I can't feel my hands.
Oh.
And momentous achievement in the world of gaming. This little game that's almost 40 years old is like, has spawned a massive, massive culture. And it is enormously popular to this day. I strongly recommend you go and watch the movie Tetris.
I'm going to do that. Oh, the movie Tetris.
Oh, my gosh.
I've never watched that.
You have to.
Yeah.
The story of Tetris, it's like watching, and it's real. And once you know it's a true story, you're just holding your head, and it's like James Bond. And I can't describe it. It is so incredible. It's a spy movie, basically. The Soviet Union is involved, the Cold War, a genius engineer that created it, betrayal, spies, double dealings.
That's amazing.
Business.
Oh, I've got to see that.
Incredibly well done, fantastic acting, just a stunning motion picture. You can't catch your breath. And for us fans of the game, you know, it was even more meaningful. And kudos to this kid, Willis Gibson is his name, for doing the impossible. So today's good news of the week is Willis Gibson beating the unbeatable Tetris.
I'm going to watch that as soon as we're done here. That's amazing.
Excellent. Until the next time, guys, we are done. This was Ivo Ivanov, your host with the most. With you was also Neil Rasmussen, sound engineer and fun engineer, music by Odd Crew. Listeners, we apologize once again for this show. Until the next time, this was Transatlantic Perspective.
See you later.